Welcome to Psychopath in Your Life. This is episode number 15. I'm your host, Diane Emerson. I'm the author of the book, Psychopaths in Our Lives, My Interviews, which is available now on Amazon and iBooks. Today, I'd like to continue on talking about gaslighting, which I started in episode 12. So if you're just tuning in, I'd really recommend you go back and listen to the episodes prior to this, which would be 12, 13, and 14. And today, I'd like to try to give you some very specific examples of gaslighting done by the psychopaths that I interviewed for my book. So I'd like to start off with I just pulled a couple. There's a lot of them there and a lot of examples. So I pulled a couple that you might find kind of interesting. And this is from Fred. Fred was a real talker. And here's what Fred had to say. Fred said, "My favorite alternative to sounding like a babbling boon," I hope I don't anyway. He was always very concerned about it. Fred had probably the hardest time of all of them with the interviews. And the reason was because I would only conduct the interviews in writing because I felt like I'd probably get a lot closer to the truth. Because you'll find that psychopaths spend a lot of their time studying people, your reactions, and they have these great instincts that I was talking about in the earlier episodes about the information gathering stages. So I cut off their ability to read my emotions, and I did that by only communicating with them in writing. And naturally, they wanted to probably communicate in different ways. And so sometimes they were really reaching for to try to figure out how I was understanding them. And I even talked about earlier, a couple of people have commented in my book that I was siding with a psychopath. Well, I wasn't at any point, but in order to gather information and do any kind of significant research, you don't start jumping in with your own feelings about, oh my God, why'd you do that? What a horrible thought. What a creepy person you are. Naturally, I thought all those things, but I wasn't going to let on to them. So anyway, so he started on quite a tear about once he figured out what gaslighting was. And that actually was an interesting dynamic because that was one thing that really stuck with him. They don't ever like to be not know everything. So he really was very uncomfortable when I pointed out that they didn't know about gaslighting. And then he proceeded to do a review and kind of slam me for that and stuff. But whatever, when you interview psychopaths, you kind of run that risk. So anyway, so he goes on to say, the catching up never really does catch up though. So the other person is always a few steps behind and unclear on why. See, this is what he's saying about this on-fly analysis. So what he says is that it's to give something such an incredibly detailed on-the-fly analysis that it's a bit like researching a deadline, only to realize you've done none of the work. And I repeated that so that I could kind of set in for with you. And so what it is, it's they start to spin you. And by the incredibly detailed analysis he's talking about. And what he goes on to say, what does this achieve? Self-doubt. Not on his part, but on your part. So he says, people will question things and say things like, am I following him properly? They're saying that in their own mind. Is he right? And I'm actually not quite smart enough to keep up with him in full flow. Have I made a massive blunder? See how they're setting you up to question things. So he continues on. Half the time, people take themselves from here straight to being on the defensive and don't really know why. Whilst knowing I've just explained why to them and impatiently trying to go over it again for the slower kids at the back of the class. Very dismissive here. And he continues on, is the person who apparently knows what is going on more likely than the increased, confused, slightly upset person who doesn't? Context is set, the framework is set, and I'm on a roll. So then he goes on to say, I'm sure you'll have come across it before, but heavily implied, but straight-faced denying, there are other women sniffing around is another one. See, they will make you feel like if this is a relationship, or if it was a boss, they would make you feel like there's somebody else coming up the pike to take your job. So he continues on. As I said before, people are much more likely to act conservatively than they are speculatively. So what he means by that is you're more likely to believe him than you are to go outside this box and to start thinking about other ways. And he really has a, you'll see a lot of disdain for women here. And he goes on to say, women all seem to utterly despise each other anyway. So a little reminder that I'm with them out of choice rather than necessity can help things move along peacefully. Mostly, this keeps the other, even more insane neurosis at bay, like debt consolidation for anxieties, I suppose. That's really quite a statement there. Like debt consolation for anxieties. Similarly, not showing any interest or concern when the other person goes out with a male friend seems to give much the same results. And he went on to talk about this further, where he would try to trick his girlfriends by, if they were going out and they would not see him for a while, and they would say, well, I'm going out with this other guy, hoping to stir some sort of emotion in him. But naturally, he had already thought this out, so he would show no emotion to try to push that person down into that crazy lane. So then he goes on to say, if, or rather when it is brought up, it will be, without fail, especially if they're doing it to try to get a rise out of me, because then who is the mega bitch? And if it backfires in their face, it is then brought up with a response is, I'm not crippled by insecurities and don't have an overwhelming need to control you. If you could try offering me the same degree of confidence and respect, then maybe we'd have not so many arguments over imagined slights. See how he is now taking this. The person is trying to grab his attention by making a comment about another person, but he doesn't go into the jealousy route. What he does is he uses that to further demean the person, make them feel less than, make them feel like they have crossed a path that they want to get back on the other side of. So then he continues on, which is a really very clarifying statement. He says, on the other hand, perhaps I am just unusual in that I'm not premeditatively malicious about it. I suppose the fact that I can go from exploding with rage one minute to totally serene and conciliatory the next is probably the main form, or vice versa. Loudly explaining that I'm not getting involved, it is a waste of my time to discuss it with someone so unreasonable, that I'm going out, all the while clearly doing the opposite of these things, is probably another. Completely unemotional, disinterested, followed by apparently frantic emotional pleas or extreme anger, upset, or seeming confused would be another. See how, if you start to think, if you're in a relationship with one of these people, one of these psychopaths, and you start to think that there's ever a way that you're going to reason with them, I'm here to tell you that it's not even remotely possible. And you can see by their own words that they have this thing completely plotted out, even though he's talking here about having to do it on the fly. But really, it is, and he's saying it's not premeditated, or maybe he's, you know, not malicious, but come on, this is pretty malicious stuff to do to somebody. But see, his view is that it's not malicious. So you have to ask yourself, do I want to be in a relationship with somebody who's really thinking this way about me? Or do I want to work for somebody who really has this ability to turn on me? And these are only questions that I can ask, and only you will be able to find the answers. So we'll continue on here. And we'll talk about what Fred had to say. And these were, they went on and on and on about a lot of different details and different case studies, the case examples that they brought up. So, but this was when I was first approaching the term gaslighting to them. So here's what Fred had to say. It was interesting to me that 3 out of 3 of them didn't know the term, but boy, they sure knew what it was. Okay, so let's talk, let's hear what Fred has to say. Fred, by the way, is probably the most explosive one. And he's, I was just talking about him, and he's continuing on here because he really had a whole lot to say. I mean, he was actually very, very hard to keep up with, because you would ask him a question and pretty soon you were getting bombarded with information and details about what that question was. So it was very informative, but it could be a little bit tiresome at times. So let's talk about, he says, he actually says, gaslighting is a term I've only just learned, but I like it very much. The term, that is. It suits what is perfectly. Not just intent, but spectacle. Make them flicker, make them dim, make them blaze brighter than ever before. Push the limit of brightness and darkness without ever overstepping and turning them off or burning them out. Do you want to burn brightly? I do. What more alive at the edge? Ha! Some of us are only alive at the edge or over it. Failing, falling, forever. I think it must tie in with the word salad concept. I really don't go in for that myself, because sometimes people talk nonsense when you can get something more constructive done with sense. Anyway, it is really more misdirection, stalling for thinking, stalling for time, muddying the waters. But word salad is basically gaslighting a conversation by wobbling the other person's brain around with so many mad jumps, non sequiturs, and juxtapositions, sorry about my pronunciation here, I think I was reading a foreign language, but it kind of is, but that can only assume they're being stupid. See, this is where they're crazy. Frankly, most people are so confused by a coherent, true account delivered at speed and with details that talking nonsense seems like a waste of time. See, what he's saying here is he's sticking pretty close to the truth, but he's delivering it with a lot of speed. And he's delivering it in a way that is setting up the confusion, and you will seem like the only person confused in this deal, because that's part of the whole concept here. So, since I'm trying to do examples today, I'd like to go to Steve. And Steve is really interesting. Steve, actually, at some point, we were talking about the eyes of a psychopath. And really, out of the blue, he sent me a picture of his eyes, which I used for the cover of my book. And I'll talk more later about my theory about eyes and photographs with psychopaths, but it's kind of an interesting theory if you look at their eyes. But anyway, back to the gaslighting here. And what Steve said is that about gaslighting, he says, it's easy to make someone think they are at fault. You just have to make them doubt themselves, which is easier when they have low self-esteem. Like if I said, you have a brain like a sieve, then change a few things around on you without you knowing, like times and appointments you made and where your phone and keys are. Then you would start to believe that I was right after a while. Then I blame you for forgetting something, and you would just think it was you and say you were sorry. So then he goes on to say, it was just about the games I play. I was only saying that I tend to play these games to get a change in a person or to make them more dependent on me, so I'll have more control. I would tell my girl to meet me, and this is just a great example, and this is so subtle, but it's a really good one. He says, I would tell my girl to meet me at a bar for a drink. And before she gets there, I go and find a staff member that I think she will be jealous of and start talking to them, but in a way that will not make them think I'm trying to pick them up, but so they seem familiar. In other words, so he's having a conversation so that they seem like they're familiar to him, somebody he knows. So then he goes on to say, maybe even tell them you're meeting your girl there, and it's a really nice place, but keep an eye out for her to walk in so you see her first. Then you can pretend you didn't see her come in, and before she comes over to you, you can say something funny to get the staff member to giggle a bit, and then you go to walk off. Then your girl has seen you with them and not sure what to think about it. And when she asks who that was, thinking that you might be friends, you just say, no one, or just an old friend. Don't offer to introduce them. That's just a small game to play. Is that what you mean? Well, yeah, I guess that is what I was asking. But so he goes on to say, what is more neatly and ironically delicious way to teach such an important lesson? Again, it's mirroring. If you treat me with disrespect, then I will do the same to you. If you ignore all the warnings and convince yourself that you're more intelligent, in possession of more insight into people than I am, and try to take advantage of me, when it all blows up in your face and you have to face your own insecurities, it is really your fault. Try to control me, and I will not only control you, but my survival instinct dictates that I will also neutralize the threat of you, even trying to do it again. The worst cases, the ones where I really can't excuse excusing my actions on any other grounds or when this happens. So, you know, you can start to see here that it's not, these aren't some random things. These aren't some things that you can haul this person off to therapy with you to fix. And you can also, if you're dealing with a workplace psychopath, you can kind of translate some of these actions into what would happen if you were working for one. I mean, you walk into a room with a meeting, and instead of Steve being at the bar with us talking to this bar employee, it could be the person you work for that when you walk into the meeting room, they'll just shut up and everybody will look at you. They may not have said anything specifically about you, but you can see how you can start to get suspicious when everybody turns to look at you. And so I really will close for today. And here again, I hope this podcast has given you some things to think about. And I do appreciate hearing from all of you. You can go to psychopathinyourlife.com and email me directly and use a private email box there. Or you can also find the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Facebook, YouTube, and the website. If you go to the website, psychopathinyourlife.com, which is the same name as this podcast, there's an audio box there that you can listen to directly. So I really look forward to hearing from you. We do have some things at the website you might want to take a look at to support the show. I designed a series of T-shirts with some of my favorite slogans, like stop painting red flags white and some different things like that to kind of give a nod to what we're talking about here. So be safe out there. Until next Tuesday, I will talk to you then. And I appreciate it very much if you'd subscribe to the show. And always keep in mind, you're a victim in this situation, and the only way to heal as a victim is to, my suggestion would be to take it one breath at a time. One day at a time is really a stretch, so I really recommend one breath at a time, and I will look forward to talking to you and stop painting those red flags white until next time. Goodbye for now.